Alright, so we are holding on Chesty Balls on the Bays, 6 lines from the bottom. Okay, we started discussing as follows. Our Mishnah had mentioned a couple of cases where a person shechts with something and it's kosher only by the Eved. Two of them were where a person shechts using a rock or using a piece of reed or bamboo or what have you.
Right.
So we said, why should that be only by the Eved? We said, so far what we were saying is, we have Rebbe saying that shechting with something that's attached to the ground is possible, even with the Eved. And Rav Chiya says it's kosher. So first we thought to say Rav Chiya says it's kosher only with the Eved, therefore our Mishnah might be like that. The last thing we were saying was that Rav Chiya actually would say it's kosher even the Chachila. The difference is, then our Mishnah would be according to Rebbe, so why would it be saying it's kosher with the Eved if Rebbe says it's possible when it's attached to the ground? Because Rebbe would distinguish between whether it was detached from the ground and then reattached. For example, you took the reed, cut it from the ground, and then stuck it back into the ground. So it's not actually rooted in the ground, but it's there. So therefore, it's not in the Chobah Me'ikra. It's called Tolos Shavosot Fibroi, that there was detached and then you reattached it. The Rebbe would say, clearly you shouldn't be shechting with that because it's too easily confused with a case where it's actually attached to begin with.
We're going to learn later
that Rebbe holds that sort of thing is possible on the basis of Xeris HaKosah. We'll get to that soon. So it's something attached to the ground. The Tolosh of the Chibro, Rebbe would be saying, is kosher only b'diyah. Because clearly you shouldn't be doing it because it might too easily be confused. Whereas Rav Chiya would say that since it's allowed, even the Chachila, if it's attached to begin with, then it's allowed also if you detached it and then reattached it. By the way, I mean, Rashi, later on in the Sugya, uses the expression that, for example, we're talking about mechuber meikre would mean where it's growing on its own. In other words, according to Rashi, it may even be that if a person actually planted it, it would also be called tolo shel v'sayf chibra. Even though it's rooted in the ground now, because a person planted it, it seems from the expression Rashi uses that would still be considered this example of tolo shel v'sayf chibra. What Rebbe would say is possible is, for example, one that's growing naturally. Tosfos discusses not like that. Tosfos says that no, if it's actually planted and rooted in the ground, it can be considered mechuber meikre. The difference is that tolo shel v'sayf chibra, which is what we're dealing with over here, would be, for example, that it's stuck into the ground but didn't actually get rooted in the ground.
You would say that a naturally growing...
According to Rashi, a naturally growing one would be the case where Rebbe would say it's possible even to be added. The case where a person planted it, apparently, according to Rashi, would be kosher b'diavad according to Rebbe. Whereas Tosfos would disagree with that and say that even in that case, Rebbe would say that it's possible. Okay, so the Gemara says, where do you get this idea that there's a distinction between something that was to begin with attached to the ground, where Rebbe would say it's possible even to the Eved, versus Tolosh, where it was detached, and later on you attached it, we would say that Rebbe says it's kosher to the Eved. Where do you get that distinction? So like this, Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Hashochet b'muchni, if somebody shechts an animal using a muchni, so a muchni is like the word machine in English. Rashi explains that it means a wheel. So imagine you have a wheel to which there is a knife attached, there's a blade attached to the wheel, so as you're turning the wheel, the blade moves, the blade turns along with the wheel, and therefore it's possible for you to use it for shechita. The Aruch has a slightly different explanation here.
If you're holding the wheel, it's not holding the knife.
That's fine. As long as the knife is doing a back and forth motion, or like this, that's what it is. Because you have a wheel that's turning, you have a circular motion, the blade is, let's say, wrapped around the wheel, so therefore, as you're turning the wheel, the blade is cutting. The Aruch has a slightly different explanation. He explains that we could be talking about a wheel that's rigged up in such a way to a knife that as the wheel turns, it makes the knife do a back and forth motion.
What else, to be holding the wheel?
You have to be turning the wheel. We're going to get to that soon. But wait, the point is...
Because a robot who would...
Hold on. Hold that thought. Yeah. Right now we're talking about that he's turning the wheel. Wait. Okay, so if he shechts with a mochni, shchitatik shela, the shchita is kosher. Continues the Braisa, not sakit b'mechubel akarka, if he shechts using something that's attached to the ground, also shchitatik shela, also his shchita is kosher. And another example, not sakit b'kosel, if the person sticks a knife in the wall, And then so the knife is attached to the wall, and then he takes the animal's neck and moves it back and forth over the knife. Also the shachapah, so he checks with it. Also the shchitah is kshera. Also the shchitah is kosher.
What, kshera lechatilim?
Well, no, kshera may mean b'dieta, but the point is that wait. On the other hand, continues the b'raita, hoya thuru yosim in akosol, if there's a rock sticking out of the wall, a sharp rock sticking out of the wall, oy kona oylam elav, or you have a weed growing on its own, the shachat bayin, you shachat with it, shchitah tzitzullah, then the shchitah is fossil. So we have to ask Kashin Adadi. You seem to have a contradiction in the b'raita. First, we're saying that you have a knife, for example, attached to the wall in the chubal akosol, we're saying shchitah tzitzullah. Then we're saying that if you have it sticking out of the wall, that's possible. El alav shmamina, so therefore that must be, we have to be able to prove from that, shiny ben mechobah me'ikru l'cholah shlovasai chibros. So obviously there must be a difference. The b'raita must be distinguishing between something that was attached to begin with versus something that was detached. One second. Mechobah me'ikru means it was to begin with attached. In other words, through yosim and akosol means that to begin with, you had a wall there where there was a rock naturally sticking out of it. Later on, the Gemara is going to give an example. When we talk about a wall, we're going to talk about, for example, the wall of a cave. So we're not talking about a wall that was built. The wall that was built is tolo shalom sa'i chibre, because the stones or bricks or what have you that make up the wall were at one time detached from the ground, and then you attach them. No, the kosol we're going to be talking about over here is, for example, the wall of a cave. That's what Rashi says over here. We're talking about the wall of a cave. So a person didn't build that wall. He dug out a cave in the ground, and therefore the wall remains over there. It's still part of the original ground that was there. So therefore, if you have a rock sticking out of that, that would be where the Braith is saying it's possible
even
to
be.
Right. Versus L'tola Shalosai Chidrei, as opposed to the cases over here where you stick a knife into the wall, or where you stick a knife into the wall, or you stick it, which is Tolosh L'Vasos Chibre, was detached, and then you attach it to the ground, that would be kosher b'dieved. Good, Shmami no, so that proves that there is that valid distinction, and therefore we can say that Rebbe would hold, that therefore we can say that last braita is again a point of Rebbe, that Mechobah Me'ikra is Tosol even b'dieved, Tolosh L'Vasos Chibre is kosher b'dieved, and that's what...
The reason why Mechobah is Tosol?
Because we're going to see soon, why.
Yeah.
With Tolish and Mechobah, it would be B'dieved, only B'dieved. We don't want him to check with such a thing with Hapkila because it's too easily confused with the case where it's naturally attached to the ground, where there will be possible for the reason that we're going to learn soon. But where's Rav Chiya, who holds that even the Hapkila is allowed, if it's attached to the ground, he has no reason to say anything about L'Hapkila or B'dieved over here. Either way, L'Hapkila is kosher. Okay. Amamar. Now let's get back to, first let's analyze the b'raita. So then we're going to get to where Rebbe gets this idea that something attached to the ground naturally is kosher b'shchita. We'll get back soon. Wait. But first let's analyze the b'raita a little bit. Amamar. We said in the b'raita, shechet v'muchni shchitatik shera. We said that if a person shechs using a wheel, again using a knife attached to a wheel, we said shchitatik shera. The question is, v'atan shchitatik tzula. We have another b'raita that says that it's kosher. So what is it? The answer is loy kasha ha b'sarna de pachra. One is talking about a wheel used by potters. So you have, when people make pottery, they put it on a wheel in order to make a round pot. So therefore, if you attach a knife to such a thing, then fine, it's kosher because you're turning the wheel the whole time. So therefore, it's koyach adam is involved. As opposed to the other kind, the kind with the second braita says that it's possible would be a wheel that's turned by water. So therefore, there's no koyach adam over there. That's what you were getting. Okay.
It's indirect.
Exactly. So therefore, and Rashi. No. The point is, there's no. Okay. The point is, even if you started it later on, the water continues to turn it. Later, Rashi brings from the next paragraph, we're going to learn that, for example, if a knife falls and shechts as it's falling, it would be possible, because you have to have koyach adam, Okay, so if a person's throwing it, he threw it, there's koyach adam over there. But if, for example, you have a knife on a table, and it happens to fall off, and on the way down, shechts an animal, then it would be possible.
What about a bow and an arrow that's in the shape of a knife? You have a bow, but you pull the
That's
bow.
Fine, then you have koyach adam. We're going to actually talk about that in the next sentence. But yeah, that's such a thing as kosher in principle, yeah. Okay. As long as you can be sure there's no jirafa or any of the other things are possible. Sure. Okay, yeah. The point is, so therefore, okay, so a potter's wheel, the person is turning it the whole time. Therefore, if he attaches a blade to it, then it can be kosher to shchita, as opposed to a water wheel would be kosher because they're koyachadim. The Iboyeseima, or another answer you could say, you don't have to distinguish between different kinds of wheels. Haba haba sounded a Maya. You could answer that both Braises are talking about a wheel that's turned by the water, but the Loikasha, there's still no contradiction, because Haba Koyach Rishon, Haba Koyach Shein. Because we can be distinguishing between Koyach Rishon, or the first Koyach, or Koyach Shein, the second Koyach. So what does that mean? Rashi explains. Let's say, for example, if you have a water wheel, so now there comes a point you want to start the water wheel turning. So you have a piece of wood over there holding back the water as like a temporary dam. You take out that piece of wood. The water starts flowing, and immediately the wheel starts turning. So therefore that would be koyach adam. Therefore koyach rishon. Because you picked up a piece of wood to allow the water to start flowing. So therefore such shchitza would be kosher. As opposed to, Rashi says, once the wheel is already turned a couple of times, Tam Rishon or Shnia, then after that, it's Koyach Sheni, then already it's an indirect thing, and therefore the Shchitza would be possible. Yeah. Then I'm learning slightly differently, that Koyach Rishon would be the first turn of the wheel, and Koyach Sheni would be the second turn of the wheel. Whatever, the point is, that there's a thing where there's a principle. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And in fact, the Chihar, the Amar Apapa. As in fact, we find in a different context, we find that distinction between Koyach Rishon and Koyach Sheni. We find that Rapapa says in Sanhedrin, "Hai ma dekaste lechadre." If a person ties up somebody else, but ashkel ale bidka demaya, and then he diverted a stream of water to flow over him, and that drowned the person. And the person dies from the drowning is chayev, and the person who put him over there and turned on the water is chayev for killing him. My time, why is that? Because it's his own arrows that affected it. It's him diverting the water, that was koyach rishon, and therefore that killed him, therefore he's chayev mitzah for murder. But also, there we make the same distinction. The Hani Milah Koyach Rishon, that only applies if a person was killed as a result of Koyach Rishon, which means Rashi says that he tied him up right near the water, so as soon as he allowed the water to start flowing, it immediately started coming to him. Aval the Koyach Sheni, but if it was Koyach Sheni, where Rashi explains, let's say he tied him up further away, So he opened up the water and it started flowing, but nevertheless it didn't go directly to him. It took time for him to get to him. Then potter. Then the Gemara doesn't say potter, but no, he would be potter because Grumma Baalmahu, because then you can't say that he's directly killed him. Then if Grumma, he'll be chayev b'dei shemayim. Grumma means indirect, right? Fine. The point is, he's not chayev mitzah for it. Fine. If it was nezek, then you could argue maybe he's chayev. But because we're talking over here about mitzah, he has to have killed him directly in order to be chayev mitzah. So therefore not. So even though the water was eventually going to reach there, but because it didn't come there by koyach rishon, because it had to flow for some time before it reached him, then therefore he's not chayev mitzah. So the same logic over here. Once the wheel starts turning, then eventually it turns enough that it's not koyach adam.
You're not allowed to do it.
Right, for sure, right. And as far as killing somebody else, right. So if he did it, if it happened the first time, he'd be chayav mitzah by deis. And if it happens afterwards, from koyach adam, then he's not chayav mitzah by deis adam, but Hashem will deal with him. Okay, the Baal HaMor explains it slightly differently. He says koyach rishon versus koyach sheni would mean, for example, that the water, let's say, it flowed for a while and then like pooled in one place and then started, and then eventually it filled up that pool and started flowing from there. Whatever, the point is that you have this difference of koyach rishon and koyach sheni. By the way, this distinction, by the way, in koyach rishon and koyach sheni, it comes up not only in connection with shchita and not only in connection with the sicha, it comes up in a more practical day-to-day thing as far as nitzalot yadayim also. You have a similar concept. The Tzilut Yadayim has to involve Koyach Adam. So there you have a similar concept. That, for example, if you turn on a faucet, you can't continue as long as the water is flowing to go and wash your hands underneath it, because eventually, after it's flowing a little while, it's not Koyach Adam anymore. So there you have the same kind of thing. You would have to turn the faucet on and off each time. Yeah.
The only difference is between the two is how many times you have to turn it on and off.
Well, in the case of Tzilut Yadayim, you need three on each hand, so fine, you need to turn it on and off repeatedly, but the principle is the same point. There, by the way, you have something that Amman writes over there. Let's say, for example, a person takes a barrel and tilts it. Then the Rambam learns, the Rambam holds that actually you can continue washing your hands until it's a daim as long as the water is flowing from there. And then the Mefarshim explained the difference is because there you actually tilted the barrel, which is doing a mice with the water itself, as opposed to here we're talking about the cases we're talking about over here in the Gemara are just like taking away the piece of wood that's holding back the water, or like, or turning on the faucet, which is just removing something that's holding back the water, as opposed to here you could argue that you actually tilted the barrel, which is doing a mice with the water. Other posts can disagree with even that, though, so therefore, even with that, also not necessarily can you wash until it's a dying state. But whatever, the point is that we have this distinction of Koyach Rishon and Koyach Sheni, so therefore, that applies to Shtika. Okay, fine. Now let's get to where does Rebbe get this idea that shechting with something that's mechobel akarka is possible. Again, that if it was mechobel to begin with, it's possible even with the Eved, and therefore they make a zera that if even if it was talushal and says chibre, where does this come from?
I found it by a sukkah, it's attaching him, put it over the sukkah.
Yeah, right. Well, by sukkah, we learn it from a different thing. By sukkah, we have a possible for it. All right. Okay. So, Yosef Rav Achor de Rav Chia, one time Rav was sitting behind Rav Chia, but Rav Chia came to Rebbe. Rav Chia, meanwhile, was sitting in front of Rebbe as a Talmud. So, as we've learned before, as we've learned various times before, the bigger Talmudim would sit in the front, and the lesser Talmudim would sit further back. So, Rav Chia, being the bigger Talmud of Rebbe, then he sat in front, and Rav was sitting behind him. The Yosef Rebbe the Kama. Rebbe was sitting and saying as follows, Minayim l'shchitah b'sho b'talosh. How do we know that shchitah has to be done with something that is detached from the ground? The reason is shenema, because you have the pasuk by the Akedah, by yikachat the ma'achelot l'shchoy. The pasuk says that Avraham took the ma'achelot, the knife, to shech Yitzchak, meaning, in other words, therefore it had to be something that he took, so something that's not attached to the ground, that he's able to take in his hand. Tosfos discusses. I mean, the question is, we've learned in Zvachim and in Menachos that really primarily applies to Kodshim, where we see that it applies to Chulin as well. Okay, Tosfos says, because since the pasuk continues that he took the knife, Lushchot has Benoi, rather than saying Lushchot has Ola, so that teaches us that it would apply to Chulin as well. Okay, the point is, he thought that he's bringing the son of the Korban, but right? But also, Tosfos says, because it says Vayikach, rather than Vayochin, he prepared, so that's where we learn you don't need a keli for Cholin per se, but you don't need a keli per se, but you do need something tallish. As opposed to Vayochin, we need a keli.
To find something that is sharp and put this like a...
No. First of all, it's possible. Uh-huh. But second of all, the point is, because the Pasuk doesn't need to tell us that he took the Machelis. We already know from earlier in the paraphrase that he brought along the Machelis. So if the Pasuk repeats, by Yikach, et ha-Machelis, it could have just said, by Yishlach Avraham et Yodai, l'shchut es b'noi. And we know he's using a Machelis. So therefore,
but
the words in the Pasuk are significant. Therefore, it teaches us that it can't be Machelis.
The Pasuk teaching, nobody says that if you do it in another way, it would not work.
Because it says, by Yikach, et ha-Machelis, that implies he must use something that's attached from the ground.
Maybe he had nothing else at the time.
Again, then the Pasuk wouldn't have to tell us. Then the Pasuk could just say, by Yishlach Avraham es Yodai, l'shchot es b'noi. Doesn't have to mention Machelos, doesn't have to mention Vayikach. So that teaches us that when it comes to Cholin or Kodshim, you need something detached, and when it comes to Kodshim, additionally, you need a Kodshim.
Is that the proof in that one?
No, that's the one. However, Amalei Rav Rav Chia Mai Komar, so Rav asks Rav Chia, what is Rebbe saying? Which means, Rashi says two explanations. One is that Rav is asking how is Rebbe learning from this pasuk that you need something detached from the ground, or the second explanation.
So he doesn't accept.
I don't understand. He says, how does Rebbe learn from these words by Yikachos Nachalos Lishchoy that it means something detached? We explain based on Rashi and Tosfos. Rav Chia and Rav didn't have Rashi and Tosfos in front of them. So Rav is asking Rav Chia. Rebbe said we're learning from Vayikachos Nachalos Lishchoy. Rav is saying I don't understand how are we learning from those four words that you need something tallish. He's asking Rav Chia to explain what did Rebbe mean.
Not in front of Rebbe.
No, it's in front of Rebbe. No, they're both sitting in front of Rebbe. The other explanation Rashi says is Rav didn't hear what Rebbe said. He heard Rebbe say something. He didn't hear what. So he asked Rav Chia, what did Rebbe say? And Rav Chia tells him. And Amalei and Rav Chia tells him, don't worry about it. all Rebbe said is like a vav that's written on a piece of wood. In other words, Rashi says, imagine you take a piece of wood, which is rough. Yes, that's it. Okay, according to Rashi's second explanation in here. Listen, one second. So Rav Chiya says, you don't have to worry about what he said. In other words, according to the first explanation, what Rebbe said, you're asking how does Rebbe learn from this passage. I disagree with the premise that Rebbe could have possibly learned from this passage. It can't really be correct. And in fact, we saw before that Rav Chiya disagrees with the din. According to the second explanation, Rav Chiya is saying, don't worry about that you didn't hear what Rebbe said. What he said doesn't really count for anything anyway, because I don't hold of it. It's as if it was like a vav that was written on a piece of wood. Meaning, in other words, what does it mean? Rashi says, imagine you take a piece of wood, which is rough, and you try to write a letter vav on it. You try to write a straight letter on it. Well, you're not going to get a straight line because you're going to have, it's going to get broken up by the roughness of the wood. So therefore, it can't really be read as a vav. Or Rashi says, the point is that the wood itself has, the wood itself has lines on it, from the wood that has grain on it. So if you try to write a vav on it, it won't be noticeable. It looks like part of the grain. The point is, either way, Rebbe is saying, don't worry about what Rebbe is saying. It doesn't really mean anything. The question is, what do you mean by krok amar? What do you mean? Rebbe is bringing a pasuk. What do you mean? How can Rebbe disagree with that? The answer is, Rebbe Chiya would answer, kroz rizuste davron, kamash malon. The pasuk is not telling us any sin. The pasuk is telling us that Abraham wanted to do the mitzvah in the best possible way. He's concerned what happens. He's ready to do the korban. He's ready to bring Yitzchak to the korban. What if he doesn't find something on the spot there available to Shechwitz? So he made sure to bring along a machelet, so this way he'll have what to do the pickle. Not to say, though, Reb Chiya is saying, not necessarily can we learn from that pasuk the actual din that you must use something detached. And in fact, we said before, Reb Chiya disagrees with the din. So therefore, but that's it. So Rebbe is learning that it has to be tolosh from this pasuk, vayikach ha'machelas, and Rav Chiya disagrees with that. You can't learn from that pasuk. It's only teaching us about the zrizus of Avraham.
Yeah,
okay. The halach is a Rebbe. Okay. Fine. Omar Rava. So now Rava says, let's talk a little bit more about this idea of tolosh or also chibbos. We said before that even according to Rebbe, there is that distinction that if it was mechubur to begin with, it's possible even b'di'evit, because then it's not at all like the machlokes. If it was tolosh also chibro midaraita, it would be kosher, and therefore b'di'evit is kosher. Only midrabanan do we say like a chili, you shouldn't use it. So let's talk about, Rava says, various cases where the tolosh also chibro comes up in other contexts in halacha. Omar Rava. So Rava says like this. Pshitali, it's obvious to me as follows. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, there's no question. Rava says that if you have something that originally was detached from the ground and then it was reattached, for example, somebody built a house, then it's still considered tolosh as far as those din. Namely, we learned in Avodah Zarah, Rashi brings it over here, that if a person worships something that's attached to the ground to begin with, for example, a person worships a mountain or a tree or whatever, it doesn't become osur because it's attached to the ground. As the prophet says, you have to destroy Elokeim al ha'arim, you have to destroy their gods that are on the mountains, implying that the mountains themselves don't become osur as their gods. So that's the thing. So we're going to quote. The Olamar is, in fact, we learned in a Braisa, in Avodah Zarah, HaMishtach V'Labayis Shaloi Osrei. If somebody bows down to his own house, then, in fact, it becomes Osir. Because if it was somebody else's house, then it wouldn't work. Because you can't ask for somebody else's house, but you can't ask for somebody else's house by worshipping it. Ein Adam Oisadavah Sheinu Shaloi. But because it's his own house, even though now it's attached to the ground, because it's built, nevertheless, he's able to after it, because the Esau died to having a chover. If you were going to argue the house, now that it's built, is considered like it's attached to the ground, doesn't work. Elokeim al ha'arim v'lo ha'arim elokeim. The pasuk says you only have to destroy their gods that are on the mountains, not the mountains themselves don't become also b'hanah as their gods. That's the point. Because the person built the house, now he's worshipping it, therefore it's able to become offer. Even though it's attached to the ground, we consider as though it was detached. Because at one time it was detached. It's called Tzitzes Yedei Adam. We learned about it in Avodah Zarah. There is a human intervention now. A human being built this house. Therefore he's able to after it by worshipping it. On the other hand, continues Rava,
anything that a human being put on a har,
Right. In fact, we learned in Avodah Zarah that, for example, suppose that people worship a mountain and suppose they go and place that mountain with gold or silver as part of the judification of it, that gold or silver, in fact, is awful. The Rambam actually counted as a seventh mitzvah among the 613 mitzvahs. But if you have an object that's worshipped, but there's a plating on it, you're not allowed to have anor from that plating, because the plating is called Shalom Chayv Sidrei. It wasn't naturally there, the person somebody put it. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So Rava says, so that part is obvious to me that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, Tolo Shalom Chayv Sidrei is definitely still considered Tolosh. On the other hand, continues Rava, it's also obvious as follows. La'inyan Hechsher Zroyim Tanoyim. When it comes to a different context than Halacha, when it comes to the question of water that's able to make seeds or other food mukshala kabel tuma, when you have something when it involves a wall or something that was built, that was originally detached and then you attached it, then it would be a machloekas tanoim, whether it's considered attached to the ground as well, whether it's considered attached to the ground or not. So like this. In other words, one second. We need a little background on this. So Rashi gives a long background over here. So like this. When the rain falls, if you have in mind that rain is going to help you regarding something that is detached from the ground. For example, you have fruit outside and you want that the rain should wash off the fruit, then that would make it mukshal lekabel tumah. But it also means, even if it doesn't land directly on the fruit, if you have, let's say, for example, as we're going to say in a second, if let's say you have a plate out, you left a plate or a bowl outside, intending that it should get full with rainwater, fine, the bowl is tolosh, therefore the rainwater that falls in there is considered that it fell lirasain, and therefore that water that landed in that bowl is now able to be matched. Food lekabel tumah. If now that water lands on food, it will be mukshal lekabel tumah. Because you wanted it to land on something tolush, you wanted it, for example, to rinse out the plate. As opposed to, if you intended that the rain is going to land on something attached to the ground, then no. Food that's attached to the ground, fine, it's not yet mukshal lekabel tumah anyway. But for example, a different example, Rashi says, let's say, for example, you have a pit dug in the ground that you want to get filled up with rainwater. The water that lands in that pit during the rainstorm is not mukshal lekabel tumah. It didn't land over there. It's not considered that it landed l'rasa. So now we have to talk about what if, for example, you had in mind that the rain should land on a wall. So apparently it's a machlokes tanoim. Ditnan, namely we learn in a Mishnah in Machshirin, which is the Masechta that deals with these issues of the Machsh or the Kabel Tumah. The Mishnah says, HaKoifa Ka'ora Al-Koifel, if somebody takes a plate and turns it upside down and puts it on top of a wall, V'shvil Shetudach, and his intention is that when the rain falls, the plate should get rinsed off by the rain, Hareza b'kiyutan, then the rule of kiyutan, which is how the pasuk introduces the concept of water being, or other liquid being matched with food, the kabel tumah, the pasuk uses the expression kiyutan, if water is placed on fruit, then it's matched with the kabel tumah, and the Gemara explains in Bava Metzia that we actually have sort of a kriya ksiv over there. It's written in the Sefer Torah, the word is written yud tof nun, which could be read as Zitain, he will put it. On the other hand, when laying the Torah, is Yutan, which is passive, it will be placed. So therefore we learn from that when is it Yutan, when is it Machshir, the Kabel Tumah, when it's Yutan, only if he had in mind that it should go there on something which is Tolush, on something which is detached from the ground. If it was something in Mechobel Akauka, and also that you have many different Mishnayos in Machshirin, and a short sugya about it in Bava Metzia, for example, you can have a case over there where he had fruit out there, and the rain fell on it, but he didn't want it. He didn't actually want that fruit to get wet. Then it wouldn't be Mechobel Kabel Tumah, because you don't have this yisein aspect. You don't have that he wanted it to be there.
Where do we know that he's full?
Because you have, because it's written Yitain and we pronounce it Yutan. So therefore it means the Yutan only works if there's an aspect of Yitain in it. Absolutely.
Yutam can mean we're thinking or we're not.
That's fine, but because it's written without the Vav in the Torah, therefore we can read it as if it said Yitain, and therefore we learn that there has to be an aspect of Yitain over there that is Machshava, is what makes it significant. So you have a Machshirin as a Masechta of six Perakim, and it deals with many different cases over there where a person wanted this to get wet or did not want this to get wet, and that makes a difference whether the water there was Machshava, the Kabbalah, is Machshava, food or not. Yeah, that's the reason. Mikveh is a whole different issue. That's not the difference. Anyway, the point is that so again, you put the place on top of the wall intending for it to get rinsed off by the rain. Fine. You had in mind that the rain should land on something which is kolosh, therefore that water that's on the plate has the din of kiyotan. If now some of that water goes and lands on food, it'll be machshir l'kabel tumah. On the other hand, continues the Braisa, the Mishnah rather, the Shvil Shala Yoka Koisel, but if you put the plate up there on top of the wall only to prevent the wall from getting damaged by the rain, then the rule of Kiyotan does not apply because the wall is attached to the ground. It has to be that you had in mind on behalf of something which was published, and here you had it in mind on behalf of the wall.
For
the plate, to clean off the plate. Now it's
polished.
Right. So therefore, it's the Gemara says, wait, so Rava says, Hog Gufa Kasha, now on the face of it, you seem to have a contradiction in this Mishnah. Now first you're saying that if you putting it there in order for the plate to get rinsed off, then you have the din of kiyotan, the water is machshel the kabel tumah, implying ha b'shvosh yudah hakoytel. But let's say you put the plate over there in intending that you wanted that the water should splash off the plate and land on the wall to clean off the wall. Seems like ain't of the kiyotan. It seems like there wouldn't be kiyotan over there, even though you had in mind that it should clean off the wall because the wall is mechobel tumah, so therefore it doesn't work. On the other hand, Bahadur Tani the Shoshal Yoka Koisal Ainabakiyas, Ainabakiyasan. Then the Mishnah continues, when is it not Kiyotan? Only if you had in mind that it's not, you don't want the rain to land on the wall at all. You want the wall not to get damaged by the rain, implying, but if you want it to splash off the plate and land on the wall in order to clean off the wall, then Kiyotan would apply. So okay, in other words, like this. It's clear from the Mishnah that if you wanted the plate to get rinsed off, then Kiyotan applies. It's clear that if you didn't want the wall to get damaged, then it's not another time. Then it doesn't apply. That water is not master the Kabbalah Torah. But what if you wanted that the wall should get cleaned off, that the rain should splash off the plate and land on the wall? The first part of the Mishnah seems to be implying that it won't be Kiyotan, and the second part seems to be implying that it will. So what is it? Amar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar said, you're right, there's a contradiction in the Mishnah. Tavra, it's a broken thing, it's a kasha. Misha Shona Zula Shona Zula. Apparently, whichever Tana taught the first part did not teach the second part. There are two different Tanoim who argue about whether a wall, which again is Tolo Shalva Soskib, right? A wall is built out of stones or bricks that at one time were not attached to the ground and now are. The one Tana apparently holds that water that you wanted to land on that wall is Machshel the Kabbalah Torah, and the other one holds that not. So there you go. That's when Rava said that we see that's Machloka Tanoim, and that's what he meant, based on what Rava Lava said. On the other hand, Rav Papa says, you don't have to say it's a Machloka Tanoim. Kula Chad Tanahu. You could say that the entire Mishnah goes according to one Tana. We could say that everybody agrees that this wall is considered Tolush, and therefore, in other words, that rain that you wanted to land on the wall will be Machshir. When that water in turn lands on fruit or other food, it will be Machshir at the Kabbalah Torah. But what it means is, how do we reconcile the two parts of the Mishnah? Hub Koytel Ma'ara, Hub Koytel Binyan. Because one part of the Mishnah is talking about the wall of a cave. You dug out the cave, and the wall was there all along. You didn't actually build that wall. It was there. The dirt was there all along. So therefore, that's Mechobah Me'ezrah. So even if you had in mind that the wall should get washed off, there's no Kiyotan. Because you're having in mind that it's something for Mechobah L'Kauta. It's like having in mind that the water should fill up your pit. That's not Kiyotan.
Actually, the wall was built.
No, the wall was not built. There was ground over there. There was flat ground. You dug out a hole in there, and there's a wall left on the side here. There's a wall left over that you didn't dig. So therefore,
water falls on what it did.
So therefore, that would be the case. So that would be the case. if you, one second. So if you put, so now that's the first part of the Mishnah, therefore. So if you put a plate on top of that wall intending for the plate to get rinsed off, sure, key your son, because the plate is definitely tallish. But if you had in mind that the wall itself should get rinsed off, that the water should splash off the plate and land on the wall, no key your son. The wall was always attached to the ground. Off the plate and land on the wall and clean it off. No kiyotan.
Yeah,
that water was not natural to Kabbal Tumah because that wall was always attached to the ground. It's Mechuber. So therefore any water that lands on that wall, if afterwards some of that water goes on food, it won't be natural to Kabbal Tumah.
Yeah,
the food still cannot be Mechuber yet.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Chobah Kosel Binyan, the second part of the Mishnah, is talking about a wall that was built out of bricks or stone or what have you. Where there is Tolashul of a Sochibra. So therefore the Mishnah means like this, says the Papa. If a person puts a plate upside down on the wall in order that the plate should get rinsed off, then the water that lands in that plate has the din of kiyotam.
And the Kabbal Tumah.
It's meant, and not the Kabbal Tumah, but Machshel
Kabbal
Tumah. Yeah. So implying, though, that he put the plate over there just in order for the water to splash off it and land on the wall, aims at the kiyutan, that water would not be matched to the Kabbal Tumah. However, we're saying the Mishnah means like this, Bamed Varmamurim, when is that talking about? The Kosel Ma'ara, only if it's a wall that existed on its own, because the wall of a cave, you didn't create that wall, it was standing there naturally once you dug out the cave. Aval, the Kosel Binyan, but when it comes to a wall that was built by human hands, using bricks or stone or what have you, only if you put the plate over there, not because you wanted the plate to be rinsed off, but because you didn't want the wall to get damaged by the rain, then ki yotan wouldn't apply. But in that case, if you wanted the wall itself to get rinsed off, hayreiz of the ki yotan, then ki yotan would apply because the wall is considered tall.
Is this called by a Myra?
But no, not a Myra. Now we're talking about a built wall.
Yeah, built wall.
Okay. So it all depends on its source, but it also depends whether it's polish or not. So Rabbah had wanted to say, like Rabbi Lazar says, that you have a machloek of tanoim, because you have the two different parts of our Mishnah, whether we're talking about a built wall, and we're saying one tana holds is considered mechuber, and the other one holds is considered tolish. Rabbi Papa is saying, you don't need that. Everybody agrees it's considered tolish. Only a kosel ma'ara, which was never tolish in the first place, that would be the case that everybody agrees is mechuber.
A natural
wall, right.
Fine.
Okay, so now that we have that whole introduction, boy Rabbah. So now Rava is going to ask, what about by Shechita? Tolosh l'vasoi Shechibra l'in and Shechita mai. What happens as far as Shechita? If you have something that originally was detached from the ground and then was reattached to the ground, what would be the din? Do we compare it to Avodah Zarah, in which case it would be considered Tolosh, or do we compare it to a house, do we compare it to a wall, do we compare it to Hechsher, to Hechsher Zroyim, to Mukhsher, to be Machsher, the Kabbal Tumah, which according to Rav, over the Machloek is Tanoim. Now, the question is, didn't we establish that before? We established that according to Rebbe, it's Kosher B'dieved. So Rashi looks...
Kosher B'dieved,
but
we still didn't...
No, one second. So the question is, why would Rav be reopening the question? Rashi explains that Rava does not accept the answer that we gave before, because Rava can explain how did we get before to say that Rebbe would distinguish between Mechuvah Me'ikra and Tolosh of Lefeshkid, right? We said because we had a Braisa that mentioned a nice attack to the wall. One second. We had a Braisa that mentioned Mechuvah Lekarka is kosher, but then we had we said that means one is talking about Mechuvah Me'ikra and the other is talking Tolosh Lefeshkid, right? Rashi explains, and the Baal Amora also explains, Rava disagrees with that understanding. Rava says there's a different way you can understand the Braisa. Therefore, not necessarily do we have to say that there would be a difference between Tolosh Lefeshkid, right, versus Mechuvah Me'ikra.
Rava doesn't hold
of that explanation.
Yeah.
Rava could learn differently. Rava could learn, and therefore he's asking the question. Yes, we said before that Tolosh Lefeshkid Chibra, when it comes to Shechita, would be considered Tolosh, but Rashi says Rava would disagree with that. He, because the Gemara is in fact going to bring that Braita again, and say that Rava would understand it differently. So therefore, he doesn't accept that. So therefore, he has the question again. Okay, that's Rashi learns that way. Then you have Tosfos discusses that what Rava is asking is that Rava is asking like this. Before we were saying that according to Rebbe, it is considered tolush and therefore it would be kosher b'diyevin. But maybe not. Maybe we could say all this time we were assuming that our Mishnah goes according to Rebbe. So when our Mishnah said that a person shechted with a rock that was tolush and also chibur, and we said it's kosher b'diyevin, that would be according to Rebbe. But maybe not. Maybe the Mishnah is according to the Priya, and Rebbe would say it's tolush and b'diyevin. Because we could. A Mishnah could be a coincidence of Chiyah. There's nothing preventing a Mishnah. Before, at the beginning of the Gemara, right after the Mishnah, we thought that was in fact the case. We thought that the Mishnah could be a coincidence of Chiyah. We thought the Mishnah could be a coincidence of Chiyah, and Rav Chiyah would say it's kosher only b'diavad. In the end, we said that no. In the end, we said that Rav Chiyah would say it's kosher even not Chiyah. So according to Rashi, Rava is revisiting the question because he says the proof that you brought that Rebbe says Tolo Shalosai Chibroi is kosher b'diavad, I don't hold that we can learn the Braisa that way. Okay. According to Tosfos, the question is, who says our Mishnah is according to Rebbe, in which case Rebbe would hold as kosher b'diavad? Maybe our Mishnah is like Rav Chiyah, but Rebbe himself would hold as kosher b'diavad. So those are two different ways of explaining Robert's question, and it makes a difference. One way is that he disagrees with the understanding of Rebbe, and the other is that he disagrees with who is our Mishnah like. Is it like Rebbe or is it like Rebbe? That makes a difference in halacha, by the way, because in the end we don't end up answering Rava's question. So therefore, the question is: if we say we have the sugya before, then we go according to the sugya before. That's it. We establish that Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi is kosher according to Rebbe. On the other hand, if we say that Rava is disagreeing with that previous sugya, then it would mean that halacha would have to be like Rava, and since we have a suffix, then it would be also. So in fact, the Mechaber Paskin, that is kosher. Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi is kosher b'diavad. The Shach and the Taz bring that maybe not on the basis of the other explanation, on the basis of Tosfos' explanation of Rava. Okay. Anyway, so back to Rava's question. Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi in and Shkei Tamai.
That Rava is saying
that maybe our Mishnah is according to Rav Chiyah, not according to Rebbe. According to Rebbe, maybe it would be possible even b'diavad. So, Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi in and Shkei Tamai. When it comes to Shkita, what is the din of Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi? To ask Rava. So, Tashma, come up, proof from the Braisa that we brought before. We said, Hoyasur Yos Menachosel. We said if there was a rock sticking out of a wall, Oshayakona Olam Elov, or there was a reed growing naturally out of the ground, the Shachat Boy, and he shechted with it, Shchitas Epsula. Then the Shchita is possible. So therefore, that would seem so, and we said before that that's Tolo Shalosa Tzibroi. The answer is not necessarily, because Hachab Mayaskin and Bekosel Ma'arim. No, because Robert could answer that maybe that Braisa is talking specifically where it's sticking out of the wall of a cave. In other words, again, a naturally occurring wall, that you have a rock sticking out of it, then we would say that it's possible. But maybe if it was a wall built by human hands, and then there's a knife or a rock sticking out of it, maybe it would be kosher.
Well, it was Polish, right?
In fact, the Gemara says, yeah, you could prove that from the wording of the Braisa, because only Jumya Dekona Olama Elam. Because after all, the Braisa brings the second case where you have a reed growing naturally. Where it's growing naturally, it's actually growing in the ground. It's Mechumah, yeah. Shmamina. So therefore, that would seem to prove that the case of the wall we're talking about is specifically a wall of a cave. That's when it would be possible. So we don't necessarily have a proof about what would happen if you have a built wall that has a rock sticking out of it. Okay. Toshma. Okay, but let's look at the next part of the braisa. It said not stuck in the postal. If a person stuck a knife into a wall, v'shachata, and he shechted using that knife that's sticking out from the wall, shchitas ekshedav, and we said the shchita is kosher. So there you go, tolo shalom shalom shchidra, it seems to be good. Yes. However, the Gemara says, shiny stuck in the lemavatalo. Yes, but you could argue that maybe the difference is, a knife you're not going to be mavatal in the wall. You could say,
Tana, you can
no, in other words, the point is like this. when it comes to a knife, you're not even going to consider it cholo shel osai chidre, because you're not going to leave the knife there permanently. You obviously just put it there temporarily. But sure, then it'll be costless. Not necessarily. If you have something which is, let's say, for example, you've built a wall, and you have a rock sticking out of that built wall, maybe you would be mevatel that, and maybe it would be possible. So we're still not sure. But not a knife, right? Toshma, the mechubal akarka shvitot ekshera. Okay, in that same bryce that we said, if you shech with something attached to the ground, then it's kosher. Gemara says no, because maybe that's not a separate case. Dilma perushi kamafarish law. Maybe that's not a third case. Maybe that's explaining the previous case. What kind of mechubal akarka is kosher? My mechubal akarka. What kind of mechubal akarka would definitely be kosher? Sacking would only be if you have a knife, for example, stuck into a wall, because then you're not going to mevatel the knife there permanently. So therefore, in other words, we could argue that maybe what the Braisa means is, if you have something which is not going to be left there permanently, like a knife stuck into a wall, then sure, the shita is kosher with it, even if we argue that tolo shel osai chidre would be considered mechubar, but this isn't considered osai chidre, because I'm going to stay there permanently. But if you have something that could conceivably stay there permanently, like, for example, you built a wall and built a rock sticking out of it, and you want to check with that rock, maybe that would be possible. Yeah. So therefore, so Robert would say there's no proof one way or the other. Maybe you could argue that then maybe that would be possible. Maybe it would be considered mechubar. Before we were arguing that Rebbe would say cholo shel osai chidre is kosher. But yeah, now Robert is taking issue with that and saying maybe not. Maybe tolo shel osai chidre, maybe the distinction is, are you going to leave it there permanently or are you not? If you're going to leave it there permanently, it's considered mechubar. If you're not, and therefore it would be possible according to Rebbe, as opposed to if something that's definitely only going to be there temporarily, like a knife stuck into a wall, then Rebbe would say it's kosher to be there.
It would be kosher
regardless, but halacha is not like this. Again, so here you have a machloikas between the mechaber and the noisa kalim, whether such a thing is kosher b'di yedet. Such a case. It depends who you follow. I mean, you have the mechaber, but you have the noisa kalim, you have the shach and the taz, bring on the basis of the explanations of the here Rashi and Tosfos, that maybe we should argue that since Rava's question is left open, then it would be possible isn't b'di yedet.
The
Noisa Kalim, meaning those commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Taz, are the two primary Noisa Kalim on Yoruba. Okay.
And we can look at it over here. Mm-hmm. So we can take down the first volume of Yoruba.
His dinim are in Simon Vav. No, or whatever it is.
Okay.
No, we'll shred that. Yeah, Simon Vav. Over tolush min akarka l'vasoish chibre b'karka, the Mechaber says, if it was detached from the ground and later on you attached it, lo yishchot, you should not shech with it, l'chachila, v'im shochat shchitot b'chera, but if he shechted with it, v'dievet the shchita is kosher, v'afilu im bitloy, even if he was mevapolit over there, for example, let's say he built a wall and put a rock in it, v'hushalay, e'in nishrash b'aret, achash a bitloy, as long as it doesn't actually get rooted in the ground. That's what the Mechaber says. However, then the Shach brings on that, he brings from the Marashal, who passes like the Rosh, that no, if you mevatel it, then even b'dieved it's also. On the basis of this question of Rabbah, which was left unresolved.
So therefore,
if he was mevatel it over there, again, if it's a knife that he stuck into a wall, which is not intended to be mevatel, then not. Right. Okay. So the Shach brings out, the Taz brings the same thing from the Rosh, so therefore, in practice, we should consider it to be possible in the evidence.
That's yellow.
Yeah. Okay. Moving along. Omamah, we said in the Braita, not sacking the coat of a Shachatwa. We said if you stuck a knife into a wall and shechted using that knife, we said the shchita is kosher, and that we said even according to Rava's question over there, the answer would be it would be kosher b'di'evet because you're not going to leave a knife there permanently. You're not about to it. However, Amar of Onan, Amar Shmuel. However, there is a detail in that. Rav Onan says in the name of Shmuel, lo shonu elashaf sakin lamayla v'spava behem lamasa. That would only work if the knife is above, meaning that the blade is facing down towards the ground, and the neck of the animal is below it. So you have, you're taking the neck of the animal and moving, right. In other words, you have the knife sticking out, and then you're holding the neck of the animal and moving it back and forth along the way. Right.
But wait a minute, are you moving the knife or are you moving the head?
No, 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 you're moving the head. You're moving the head. The knife is attached to the
way you shift.
It's not the normal. The normal way is you
shift
don't...
to move the knife.
Okay, one second. Stop a second. As long as you have a back and forth motion rather than drossa, rather than pressing, it's kosher. What we're saying is, the normal way of shechting is you have the animals lying on the ground, you take the knife and you shecht. Usually you're moving the knife and the neck stays in place. Here you have the knife is standing still and you're moving the neck. That's also fine. It's also fine.
Is it fine?
Yeah, well, we say, yeah. However, avol sakim lamasa v'sava behema lamayla. However, if the blade of the knife is facing upward, and therefore you have the knife below and the neck of the animal above, then it's no good. Chayshinen shema yidros, because then you have a real problem that there might be drasa. The animal's neck is heavy, and therefore you're holding it above the neck, and therefore it's going to end up pressing down on the knife, and you're going to have drasa, which makes the shchita possible.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
The question is, what do you mean? Valkatoni, because the Braita says, Ben Sha Sakin Lamasa Vasava Behema Lamaila, Ben Sha Sakin Lamaila Vasava Behema Lamasa. The Braita continues that it doesn't matter whether the knife is above and the neck of the animal is below, or the other way, whether the knife is below and the neck of the animal is above, or the knife is above and the neck of the animal is below. Either way, it's kosher. So what do you mean that there's a distinction that Rav Onan is saying? The answer is Amar Rav Zid looks dull in Kaponim. Okay, Rav Zid says, yes, but what the Braita means is, the Braita is telling us two different cases. The Braita is telling us one line over here, but it's referring actually to two different cases. Sakin Lamasa Vatsava Behema Lamaila is talking about the Tolish. When is it kosher when the knife is below and the animal's head is above and the animal's neck is above? That's if you have a knife that's not at all attached to anything, where the person is holding the knife. So fine, if the animal is hanging in the air and the person is using the knife and moving it back and forth, then the knife can be below. Then there's no problem with drasa because the animal is hanging over there. You're holding the knife, so therefore there's no problem with drasa because you're the one controlling the knife and how it's going to cut. So therefore you can make sure that there won't be drasa. So that would be the case where it's kosher when the knife is below.
And the
neck is above. Back in the Maila, the Sava, the Hema Lamata, the Mechuber, but when the knife is attached to the ground or to the wall or whatever, then you have to have that the knife is above and the neck has to be below, because otherwise you have the problem of drasa. Okay.
When the knife is detached, it doesn't really matter according to Ramanan.
That's what Rizvi is telling us. Right, then it doesn't matter. Either way, if the knife is detached, it doesn't matter whether the knife is above or below. Because you're controlling the knife. So you can control whether there'll be drasa or not.
But
when the knife is attached, you have to have the neck below the knife, otherwise you're going to have drasa. And by the way, Tosfos points out, and then this is brought la'alocha, even if the person were to say afterwards, so he shechts this animal, and he says, I'm absolutely certain that I didn't do drasa, even though the knife was attached to the wall, no good, we're going to pass it, because another time he may do the same thing, and he will do drasa without realizing. Rapapa says, you don't need that distinction. It's a doichik to answer like Rav Zid, that you have one sentence in the Braita, Bein Shasakin Lamasa Vatsava Behem Lamaila, Bein Shasakin Lamaila Vatsava Behem Lamasa, and you, Rav Zvid, want to say it's talking about two different cases, one where the knife is detached and one where it's attached. Rapapa says it's a doichik to answer, to explain the Braita like that. Rather, the difference is, when is the Braita saying that it's kosher, whether the knife is above or below, we're talking about when it involves a bird, where a bird is a light thing. So therefore, even with a bird, if you're shechting a bird using a knife attached to the wall, even if you have the neck above, fine, the bird is light enough that you can control and make sure there's no drop. So then it would be kosher even if the neck is above. Then you have to have the knife above if it's attached to the wall. In other words, again, if it's detached, fine, for sure there's no problem. According to the Zvid, one case the Braita is talking about where the knife is detached and the other where it's attached. According to the Papa, both of them are talking about where it's attached. One is saying if you're shechting the and the Braita is saying attached to the wall. And the Braita is saying it doesn't matter whether the knife faces up or down, therefore whether the neck is above or below. Either way, it's kosher, provided you're shechting a bird. for the bird you can control. Whereas with an animal, you would have to have the neck below.
When you say you mean the handle that is in the glove. The cocking is out.
Yeah, obviously the blade. The handle is inside the wall or whatever. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. No, whatever. The point is the blade is sticking out. Yeah, obviously. The blade is sticking out. Okay. Fine. Okay. So that's that. But then so that takes care of this whole business of Tolosh and Mechuber and Tolosh and all the other. Okay. Now on to another topic. We mentioned in the Mishnah that you're allowed to share a person can share with a koneh, with a reed, and we said b'dieved is kosher, and then we said in a braisa at the beginning of the Gemara on Tesvavim days, we said that that you're allowed to share with krumis shel koneh, you're allowed to share with the shell with the outer shell of bamboo or some other reed like that. So now let's learn some details about that. Amr of Chista, Amr of Yitzchak, the Amri Lob Masnitz Tana, so the Chista says the name of Yitzchak, or others say we learn in a Braisa, Hei Dvarim Nemru B'Krumis Shokana. There are five dinim that apply to a shell of a reed, to a piece of bamboo like that. Number one, Ein Shersinba, you're not allowed to shech with it. Now wait, because we're going to ask what we said before you could. You're not allowed to shech with it, because splinter has come off it, and therefore you're not going to have a proper shtis. So you're going to end up, the splinters are going to end up puncturing the corner or the vesh. Number two, the ein molin bar. Number two, you cannot use it for bris milah for the same reason, because the splinter, you're going to get splinters from it. It's going to be dangerous for the baby. Right. Number three, the ein machatsin bar. So you're not allowed to cut meat with it. All of these are for the same reason, because splinters come off it, and therefore it's going to end up being dangerous. You're going to eat the meat. You're going to eat the meat, and then you're going to get splinters. Yeah.
That's the reason.
The problem is that it's going to tear the corner of the vesh. Basically, the idea is for splinters. In the case of shchita, the splinters will popple it. In the other cases, the splinters will make it dangerous. The splinters will get into the wound of the mila. Okay, so for any moment, you're not allowed to use it to cut meat because the splinters could be dangerous to you. You're not allowed to pick your teeth with it. Right. Same idea, because the splinters may get into your gums and it'll be dangerous. And number five, the in the kantimba. And also number five, you're not allowed to wipe with it after going to the bathroom. For the same reason, because the splinters can be dangerous. Okay. So now let's analyze that. What do you mean ancient? In those days, they didn't have toilet paper. You wiped yourself with whatever was available. So yeah. Okay, if you had a corner, then you might use that. Okay, wait. So what do you mean, Ein Shersinba? We said you're not allowed to shech with it. What do you mean, Valtani? We learned in the Braisa at the beginning of the Gemara. Bakol Shersin, Ben Basur, Ben Beskochus, Ben Bekrumus, Shorkana. We said you're allowed to shech with a rock or a piece of glass or a krumus, Shorkana. So what do you mean you can't shech with it? Amara Papa Besimuna de Agma. So the Papa says, yes, but what the Braisa means, that you're allowed to shech with it, is the kind of plant called Simuna de Agma. So Rashi brings a French word for it, which is, it's a kind of grass that grows in the swamp, where the point is, when it dries, it has a very sharp edge, and it doesn't splinter.
What is
it called? Whatever, Rashi uses the French word lishka. Some kind of grass. It's some kind of grass that has the property that the oruch explains a little bit differently, that it means some kind of leaves. Whatever it is, the point is, when it dries, it has a very sharp edge, and there's no splinters that come off it, therefore there's no problem. Bamboo, you have a problem, because splinters can come off it, but this simuna da'agma, lishko, whatever, then there's no problem with it. That would be the kind where the braisa is saying you're allowed to shech with it. Because then you don't have a problem, it won't tear. Then we said, in the chasim babos, so we said as far as the ones that do have splinters, we said one thing, you're not allowed to cut meat with it because of the danger. However, the Gemara says, Rapapa machatech bakir be'dogim. Rapapa would use such a piece of bamboo or whatever, he would use it to cut fish guts. Because, the ziggy, because they're clear. They're translucent. If there are splinters in them, you'd be able to see it. So therefore, there's no danger, because if there's any splinters in it, you'll be able to see them. Kir be'dogim means fish guts. If he had to cut those, he would use a piece of bamboo for that. The braisa is saying you can't because of the danger. The reason is because they're translucent. They're transparent enough that if there's splinters in them, you can see. Yeah. Okay. similarly, Rava Barabhona Machatech Ba'oifa the Rakich. Similarly, Rava Barabhona would use such a thing, would use bamboo or whatever to cut chicken or to cut meat of bird because it's soft. When it comes to meat from an animal, it's tough. Therefore, when you're cutting using a piece of bamboo, splinters are likely to break off. As opposed to with meat, with chicken or whatever, it's softer. Therefore, you don't need as much pressure. Therefore, splinters are less likely to come off it.
Okay.
No, forget about shirka. The point is that he would use it to cut up. He had a piece of chicken to cut. He would use it. He wouldn't mind using a piece of krumis shokana for it. Eye splinters because there's not enough. You're not putting enough pressure on it for pieces to splinter on. Then we said in the Braisa, the fifth thing we said you're not allowed to do with a krumis shokana is the ein mekanesin bo. We said you're not allowed to wipe with it after going to the bathroom. So the Gemara says, what do you need the reason? Because of splinters. Typically, I have another reason why you shouldn't be using it. Mishum de omamar, because we learned in a Braisa, hamakaneya v'dover sho ur shelatasoy. If somebody wipes with something that is flammable, shinov noshus, then its teeth fall out. Rashi says the word teeth over here, and we'll talk about one second, toilet paper is flammable, so hold that thought a second. But what teeth are we talking about? Rashi says we're actually talking about two different kinds. First of all, there's the teeth in a person's mouth. Second of all, also, there's teeth. Second of all, you have tooth-like projections around the hole over there, or the muscles of the anus are shaped a little bit like teeth. So the point is, in other words, if a person wipes with this kind of thing, it can cause them to fall out or to weaken, in other words, and then you have a prolapse, and you have the start bulging out. So therefore, the point is, bamboo is flammable, so of course you can't wipe this anywhere. What do we need? The reason because of splinters.
So we say so.
The answer, one second, Omer HaPapa, Kinuach Pimata Samen. So the Papa says, you're right. When the Braisa said you're not allowed to wipe with it, we don't mean to wipe after going to the bathroom. That's true. You're not allowed to anyway because it's something flammable. What we're talking about, rather, is if you have a wound that you need to clean out, you shouldn't use a piece of krumis chokana for it for the same reason, because then splinters may get into the wound and be dangerous. Okay. Now, you're asking, of course, the obvious question is, nowadays we wipe with toilet paper, which is flammable. And, okay, in olden times, they didn't have toilet paper, but nevertheless, eventually, there's a common thing to use with grass or other such things. So already going, so goes back already, so you have, the Ramah asks about it, and he says the only answer must be showing up to Hashem, that when you have something that even though the Gemara tells it's dangerous, but you have when people commonly do it, and people aren't harmed by it, okay, the reason is because showing up to Hashem, Hashem guards the innocent. Like, because people are doing it innocently, not realizing that the Gemara says not, therefore there's no danger. On the other hand, you have other posting answer. The difference is, in those days, when they went to the bathroom, it was out in the field. So why is it that using something flammable is dangerous? Not because there's any natural reason that should make a person's teeth fall out or rectal prolapse or whatever. The reason, rather, is because somebody may have done kishuf with it. If it's lying out there in the field, somebody may have done kishuf with it, and that can have bad effects on the person. Nowadays. Well, the point is, I guess, that flammable things were more likely to have been to be susceptible to kishur. So therefore, nowadays, and already not just nowadays in the 21st century, but even already in the times of the Rishonim, when they went to the bathroom, it was indoors. There's less of an issue of things lying around that could have been used for kishur. Therefore, you're allowed to use them. And that, indeed, is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and that is why we're able to use toilet paper and other things. So according to the Ramah in Darche Moshe, he doesn't accept the Kishul thing, so he says the only reason must be showing up Tzoyim Hashem, that Hashem guards the innocent. But according to this other explanation, I think it goes back to the Trumas Hadeshen, the reason is because the whole problem is Kishul, and therefore with Kishul isn't a concern because it's not outdoors and it's not a problem to begin with. And that's indeed brought in Shulchan Aruch and in the Magen Avraham, and therefore we're able to use flammable things. So we can use them.
Okay. Kishuv is in the field, not at home.
Not at home, right. Okay. Fine. Okay. We said in the Mishnah like this, HaKol Shechtin La'olam Shechtin. We said in the Mishnah that anybody can shecht, and you can always shecht. So what does that mean? Now, in the first Mishnah of Ar Masechta, we said HaKol Shechtin, and we had a long discussion over there what it means, who is it that's only L'Hachila, that L'Hachila shouldn't be shechting and only B'diyevet can shecht. We talked about, was it a Tome, was it a Chol and Shanatha or Paras HaKodesh, was it a Kusi, was it a Yisroel Mumer, etc. So here again it says a Chol Shechtin. It doesn't mean to tell us again that anybody can shecht, because we already knew that from before. It means HaKol B'Shchit of Afilo Ois. It means everything has to be shechted, including burn. Why does the Mishnah need to stress that? Because now, when the Torah introduces the concept of shita, the pasuk mentions in connection with bakar v'son, with cattle or sheep. So therefore, it doesn't mention in connection with burn. And in fact, in the next parak, we're going to have a machlokes. There is a tano who holds that birds do not require shita in a Torah. So therefore, our Mishnah is telling us not like that. Birds require shchita. Kol shchitin means any kind of creature that you want to eat requires shchita, including birds. Right. That says that birds have to have shchita. Yeah. And when we say, la'olam shchitin, we said you can shech any time. What does that mean? Man tana. Which tana is the one that says that? That is saying that they're always allowed to shech and eat, as opposed to what? What does that mean? Amar Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel. Specifically, that our Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Shmuel. Like the Tanya, we learned a Braita. Okay, so we're going to learn a Machlokes about what happened during the years that the Yidden were in the desert. What was the deal as far as Shechita? So like you have the in Parshas Re'e, the Torah tells us like this. The Tanya, we learned a Braita. The passage says, when Hashem expands your borders in Eretz Yisrael, as he commanded you, and you say, I want to eat meat, then you have to shecht it, and then you have to shecht it according to the rules. So what does that mean? Rabbi Shmuel, we'll learn later on in the Sefta that one thing we learn from it is that a person shouldn't eat meat unless they can actually afford it, unless like they're rich, relatively speaking. But still, the fact that the pasuk is telling us a chiddush that now you're allowed to eat meat without bringing it as a korban. So that means Rabbi Shmuel Omer loy b'hakosiv el lahasiv lahem b'sar taiva. Rabbi Shmuel says it means the pasuk is coming to teach us that you're allowed to shech meat and eat it just because you want to eat meat, not for a korban. Why? Why do we need that? Shabbat Chilin, Nasa Lahem B'Sar Taiva. Because Rabbi Shmuel learns, as long as they were in the Midbar, they were not allowed B'Sar Taiva. If they wanted to eat meat, they had to shecht it as a korban, says Rabbi Shmuel. So therefore, Shabbat Chilin, Nasa Lahem B'Sar Taiva, originally it was also to them, Mishan Nishna, to the Oris, once they came into Eretz Yisrael, Hutu Lahem B'Sar Taiva, now they're allowed B'Sar Taiva, now they're allowed to shecht just because they want to eat.
So why was there
this? Okay, so Rashi explains because you have Sukkim in Parshas Achrei Mos, you have Sukkim, we learned about them at the end of the Zvachim, that says that if a person shechts in the Machneh, shechts an animal in the Machneh, they'll Pesach Oyo Morid Lo Hevye, and he just bring it to the door of the Oyo Morid to bring it to the Korban, he gets closed. So Rabbi Shmuel says that means not only animals that a person had been Machnesh as a Korban, but any animal a person wanted to eat, he'd have to shecht as a Korban.
Right.
That's Rabbi Shmuel says that. Tosfos argues the fact that after all, that pasuk is only talking about kodshim. So as Tosfos says, no, what it is because the pasuk is saying, that itself implies that up until now, they weren't allowed to do that oichlo
baser. So what's the connection between the yachiv and the shechita?
The connection is, according to Rabbi Shmuel, as long as they were in the Midbar, they didn't have the borders of Eretz Yisrael, then they're not allowed to shecht animals just for taiva. They're only allowed to shecht the korban. Continues the Braita. Mishan Nichnas to the Oros Hutalam B'Sar Taiva. Once they came into Eretz Yisrael, they were allowed B'Sar Taiva. But Achshav Shigalu. So continues Rabbi Shmuel. This is Rabbi Shmuel continuing. This is the Rabba continues. Rabba continues explaining what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. So the point is, what does our Mishnah mean when it says La'olam Shertin? So you would think the Achshav Shigalu. You would think, says Rabba, according to Rabbi Shmuel, now that the Jewish people have gone into Galus, and we don't have a Beit Mikdash. Maybe we go back to the original Isser. Maybe the din of being allowed to shecht animals for food is only when the Yidden are living in Eretz Yisrael. That says Rava, is why our Mishnah says La'olam Shechtin, to teach us, no, not like that. Even if one's Rabbi Shmuel, even once the Yidden came into Eretz Yisrael, Shechita is mutter for B'Sar Taiva, and it remains mutter forever after. There's no time when it goes back to being offered. That's why the Mishnah says, La'olam Shechtin, to tell us that even when there's no Beis Mikdash, even when the Jewish people are in Golos, we're still allowed to shecht meat and just eat it. Right. Okay. On the other hand, Mach Yisrael Rabbi Yosef, However, Rabbi Yosef asked.
Still offers him korbanos.
No, yeah, well, no, there's no business. There's no business mitzvah. Well, yeah, according to the Rambam in principles, you know the makom mitzvah and all. Yes. Okay. However, machzik for Rabbi Yosef. However, Rabbi Yosef asks on that. How can you explain the Mishnah means that? But the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shmuel and telling us that even bizman agolos you're allowed to shech. First of all, hi, la'olam shosin. First of all, why is the expression in the Mishnah la'olam shosin? Why focus on the Shvita? La'olam shosin va'ochlim mibolei. If that's the case, the Mishnah should have said, you can always shecht and eat, because the principal thing is not that you're allowed to shecht. The point is that you're allowed to eat meat in chutzlar. That's what it is in the Mishnah. Should have mentioned the word ochlim. And second of all, va'oid. And also, what's the logic to say that it should be also after the Jewish people go into Galus? The Ikra, my time is so. After all, why was Shchita from Sartaiva Osir when they were in the Mishkan? Mishum Dahavim Kavila Mishkan. Because they were close to the Mishkan, so therefore instead of shechting in the Machna, it's not that hard to bring it to the Mishkan and bring it to the Karban.
All of them do it.
And no, therefore, if they didn't do it, they'd be Chayav Karis. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says they couldn't do it in the Midbar. All the first my time at Ishtu. So later on, when they come into Eretz Yisrael, why are they allowed to shech for the South Taiva? Because they have a Merachim in Mishkan, because they're far away from the Mishkan. Eretz Yisrael is big, and therefore they can't easily travel to the Mishkan every time they want to shech. Well, then, Choshkin Ashtad, Al-Chikul Luhutbeh. How much more so after the Golas, we're even further away from the Bismikash. Of course, there's no Habam in it to say, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, that Shchita for South Taiva should be altered. Why would the Mishnah be needing to tell us that you're allowed to if logic dictates that it's allowed to? So therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, no, it can't be that our Mishnah is telling us according to Rabbi Shmuel. There has to be a different explanation. And therefore, so
according
to Rabbi Shmuel, it's obvious that you should be able to check even this monogol. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is going to have a different explanation, which we'll deal with tomorrow, about the Shem, that the Mishnah is not according to Rabbi Shmuel, but rather according to Rabbi Akiva. Who says, well, we'll learn it tomorrow. Rabbi Akiva says, on the contrary, that when they were in the Midbar, they did not have to shecht animals. If they wanted to eat, they did not have to shecht an animal. They were allowed to kill it anyway.
How do we know that?
So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us, after Matan Torah, before they came in Eretz Yisrael. So I'll summarize, and then we'll learn the Gemara inside, but we need to go to Myers. But Rabbi Akiva learns the other way around. That what it means is, while during the 40 years in the Midbar, they were allowed to kill animals any way they wanted. After they came into Israel, the din is they have to shech. So you would think after we go into Golos, maybe we go back to being allowed to kill an animal any old way. No. Well, Olam Shurstin tells us that not. Okay. So that's all. That's Rabbi Yosef is saying that Chayav Mishnah. That's
it.
According to the Akiva, they were allowed to kill it any way they wanted in the Midbar. They did called it Tzar Nechir. They were allowed to stab the animal and kill it rather than shechting it.
The Rambam, when did they sheft them in the Beis Hamikdash?
Is when they were for Karbonis, they had to sheft. For Karbonis, they had to sheft.
When they were in Egypt, they had to sheft
the Karbonis. No. When they were in Egypt, the only thing, they didn't bring any Karbonis. The only thing they had to bring in Egypt was the Karbon Pesach, the day before they left.
Yeah.
So that they sheft. Fine. Not they have to sheft, but that's the Karbon. That's the Karbon. We're talking about Cholin. Again, Rabbi Shmuel had said that Cholin they were completely also to have in the Midbar. The only way to have meat in the Midbar was to shech the Korban. Rabbi Akiva says the other way around. On the contrary, in the Midbar, if they wanted to eat meat, they didn't have to bring it to the Korban, they didn't even have to shech it. After they came into Eretz Yisrael, then they have, if they want to eat meat, they have to shech it. But I'm in fact passing like that, like Rabbi Akiva. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Mr. Chen.
Between
Mr. Chen.